Listen to this.
Zakawani, the flying winger.
Here's Brad Evans.
It's Steve.
Who is it? It's Brad Evans.
It's not again.
Happy days are here again. Turning with a drive, it's Steve Zakawani.
Evans with the left foot.
He's an attacking threat, Brad Evans.
This is so weird.
The party has started.
Hey everybody, Brad Evans here with Side by Side. Steve Zakawani is stuck in the snow somewhere.
Out in Puyallup.
It's his first time ever camping. I think he's stuck in his car. But he's in a Tesla, so I think he's good for at least a couple days while this melts away. But yeah, this is a Side by Side podcast this week. I'm here with Keely, and we're just going to talk about World Cup. I think the last time we had spoke was just about the roster.
Yep.
And now that we're three games in, the team has advanced, most importantly, 5 points. If you would have told us that beforehand, we'd be ecstatic, I think. But even so, looking back, we can break it down. That first game against Wales, I was so surprised at how the team played in the first half. I thought they played unreal. And I think it was a combination of energy and the fact that you're playing Wales, who wasn't a great team. And I think that they were kind of taken aback by, oh, these guys can play. I think typical teams in U.S. fashion have been very organized. That will never change. But there are guys in this team that have flair that I have never seen before. Save for maybe like a Clint or, you know, someone like that. Most of the guys in the midfield for the U.S. in the past have been very workmanlike. You know, you look at Michael Bradley, who was there for a long time, Ricardo Clark. You know, you can run down the list. Everyone knows the midfielders. But never have we seen a midfield like this that has, to me, a Latin-Spanish flair.
Just class, man.
Yeah, class. Pure class.
Class.
But a different way of thinking and seeing the game. And that's what I was most impressed by through these first three games, is the willingness to create something out of nothing. And that's what gets you to the next round. And that's what will push this team potentially past a good Dutch side, but not an amazing Dutch side. So I think they have a real opportunity to progress. But if we want to break it down, let's look at the Wales game. Off to a great start and a fantastic finish from Timothy Weah, and just a great build-up. And you really saw what the U.S. was capable at that point. And then halftime came, and Wales made an adjustment, and they brought on the big bruiser up top and changed formation, changed tactics. And at that point, we were asking questions like, okay, how are they going to adjust? And the U.S. could not adjust, and they couldn't handle what was coming at them. Wales knew that they had to get a result in that game to even have a fighting chance in the remaining two and three games. But yeah, your kind of thoughts and overall view of the first game.
Well, it was awesome that Jordan Morris got on there. That was great.
Jordan got his appearance.
So excited about that. First half, I mean, we looked like, I'm trying to like say this the right way, because we've always looked like we belonged. I don't want to say that we haven't belonged, but we really looked like a threatening side in that first half. And I mean, it was just so exciting to watch. Our guys on, like, Anthony Robinson and Sergino Dest on the, like, they're incredible.
Yeah.
Can we just talk about how incredible they are? Tyler Adams is a boss in midfield this entire time. Like, we're so exciting to watch, dude.
If they make it past this next game against Holland, Tyler will be on the best 11 for the tournament, I think.
Oh, Leeds United is probably so excited now. They're like, we're going to make so much money off of this kid. Like, oh my God, that transfer
Selling jerseys,
fee.
Everything.
Yeah, dude.
So that's a great shout. But the second half, way different.
Way different.
And what in your mind changed? I think we all have our own opinions, you know, but for you, what changed?
I mean, first of all, we had a lead going into the second half, so your tactics just change, obviously. It just kind of felt like we didn't have that same urge to attack, and it also felt like the inexperience showed a little bit.
Yeah.
The penalty with Walker Zimmerman, like, listen, he's had a good tournament so far. I don't want to, like, pile on that kid. That was inexperience to me. And I feel like...
Do you think the moment just got to him?
Yeah, I think the moment got to him. I think it was a little bit of a panic thing. But I don't hate that it happened, because I think we kind of need to start... We need to learn from mistakes because we're so inexperienced. Mm. And the fact that it happened in the first game, we still got a result. And then he came in as... Well, we'll get to the third game. He came in as a sub and was incredible.
Yeah.
I feel like he took that moment, and instead of folding under it, he really like learned from it.
Yeah, that's a great shout. I think the coaching staff probably had to sit down, and he knew instantly. Your back's to goal, you don't leave your feet. right? But in that moment, like you said, that was a huge pivotal moment. They're under so much pressure in the second half that when you're in that situation, you kind of just lose your mind a little bit. And that's what separates the Virgil van Dijk from Walker Zimmerman, right? It's that high pressure moments week in, week out with Liverpool that Walker doesn't have. He's a fantastic defender in Major League Soccer, but he doesn't face the same type of competition week in, week out, where it's those guys every single day, every single week, every single training session.
Exactly.
So that is, you're right, that's the experience. And I think U.S. players are smart enough to learn from that one mistake, and he did. He's come in a fashion and had, you know, a good remainder of the group stage games that should propel him confidently to move forward. Fast forwarding then from that game to the England game. I wish Steve was here right now to get his take. But
I know we need it so bad.
I mean, that game was fantastic. And I just thought that was a bunch of grown, mature guys going out and playing and not sitting back and saying, hey, we don't belong here. I think they said it after the game, like, we belong here and we're going to show it today. And I think England was a bit shell-shocked. Hey, if I'm any team, I let the center backs have the ball. As an opposing team, yeah, let the center backs have the ball. Let those two guys try and make the game. And you saw it. Errant long balls going out of bounds and not dribbling amazing runs from center backs and just no idea. And so you really looked at England and found a weakness. And that's credit to the coaching staff for doing their homework and guys who have played against them week in, week out in, you know, Tyler and Aronson and all those guys. Tim Ream have seen all those guys before. So that's a good matchup. And a good result, and I think giving confidence then heading into the final group stage game, which, I mean, you know, that is life or death, literally
drama.
Life or death and drama. So that was never going to be a beautiful game, but chance after chance after chance. And you just saw another great performance from just about everyone on the pitch. And to see this team move on, you saw how much it meant to them, you know, dropping down and falling on the ground and it just means a lot to these guys. So it was really, really good to see. And I am really proud of the group because my questions before were, does this team have enough experience? And I guess because my experience with the national team was always with a lot of veterans.
Yep.
I always had that, you know, 28
over 100
to
caps 30,
yeah,
guys.
Always
yeah.
Those guys. I mean, I always played with six or seven of those guys. And so that was just my experience and what I knew. Now you have to kind of flip the script and say, okay, these guys belong. That's the bottom line. You advance. Now you're in the final 16 in the world, right? That's where we're at right now as a team. And that is a huge accomplishment when you look at how many countries there are, how many teams qualified, and now you're back into the mix of, okay, U.S. advances once again after missing out on the last World Cup. So a huge, huge round of applause to this group of guys, coaching staff. They're doing everything right, and I think this matchup is about as good as we could have asked for.
Totally agree.
In the next round. Because African teams, crushing it. They are very...
I'm so glad we're not playing Senegal, dude.
I'm glad I'm not playing any African team. Because to me...
Morocco, man.
I mean, speed, athleticism, a different way of body movement than anywhere else in the world. Just the way, when you watch African teams, the way that they even receive the ball and accelerate into space is so much different than every other... continent in the world. You could liken it a little bit to, I think, South America, but me watching them, they just, body movement wise, is so different and very unfamiliar to the average player when you're talking about defensively and tactically. Very unpredictable, and that can make things, with a team like the U.S. who's very structured, it could be really difficult to play against. So I'm glad we're not playing a team from that continent. I'm also glad we're not playing a team from South America or Spain or Portugal.
Yeah.
Because, yes, we play against Central American teams, but we still sometimes struggle against Central American teams. Now you're talking about the same style of play, tactics, drawing fouls. How can I waste time? How can I grab you on the back or step on your toes? Or, you know, typical things in CONCACAF, they do, but their play is just a different level. And you combine those two things, and those teams are extremely dangerous. Argentina, Brazil, and... you know, Portugal and Spain, those four teams you don't want to face in this round. And now we're talking about the team that we're facing, and that is the Dutch. Extremely organized, but I don't think they have that guy on the team right now.
I was looking through their roster.
I mean, the striker Gakpo, I think, is a fantastic young talent, and he will cause problems, no doubt. But if you're talking about a team that you want to face in a knockout round, similar to Belgium from 8 years ago, but Belgium had much higher quality players, and you're going to see a tactical battle in this game, and that's what I like about it. And I think it's just a great matchup for us. And either way it falls, I mean, I see us advancing from this game.
I do too.
And what an accomplishment that would be.
Knock on wood. And then we play probably Argentina.
Yeah, there's no reason why we shouldn't advance out of this game if you're looking at who you would want to face in the next round. So I think, yeah, tactically we set up nicely. I think physically we do as well. I think we see the game similarly to the Dutch, very organized, very tactically aware. And then we have a little bit of that extra talent with our guys that can push us to the next level. There's no one on that. I mean, Memphis Depay, if he's fit, healthy, ready to play 90 minutes, yeah, extremely dangerous player. But there's no one on that team that really strikes fear into, I think, anyone's eyes on the U.S. Yes, of course, you're going to give respect. But I think moving forward, this is the team that you would want to face.
The thing that's really exciting for me is how young this team is and how we're already talking about they have a total path to the quarterfinal, at least.
Yeah. Quarterfinal, for sure.
Quarterfinal, for sure. Argentina, Messi on a mission,
yep.
World on his back. I feel so bad for that guy, by the way. I mean,
you shouldn't.
So, I know I shouldn't.
No.
But so much pressure on that one person.
You shouldn't. Just, I mean, he knows if there's anyone who knows how to handle pressure, it's him. Because you've seen players in the past like Freddie Adu, who came out at the same exact time.
True.
When I played in my under 20s, the whole tournament was centered around all the bulletins, everything. Adu versus Messi. That was the talking point of that tournament. And you've seen now the split of where each of those guys have gone. Each of them highly, highly touted. Freddie was actually younger than him at the time by, I think, a year or two. And so you've now seen how one person has handled it extremely well, whether that's the family around him, a better agent, whoever it is, versus a guy like Freddie Adu, who maybe didn't have that support system behind
the
him.
Infrastructure behind him.
But I also think Argentina's been dealing with superstars for a long time.
Yeah.
Right? The U.S. was very new to that was the first time, 14-year-old signing for the U.S., or for Major League Soccer. No one had ever experienced anything like that for soccer. So how do you handle the interviews? It was all first time for everyone. So, yes. Do you feel bad for him that he's got to face the cameras all day? That would suck. But at the end of the day, he's doing that, and he's performing on the field for the better part of, 20 years now. And same goes for Tom Brady. Like, all these top athletes can do it.
That's true.
It's just a matter of who you Yeah, that's what separates them. It's just a matter of who you surround yourself with as well.
The other exciting thing, just, like, from watching this team, especially in that England game, I feel like, and you obviously know as someone who's played for the U.S. men's national team as many times as you have and in as many games as you've played, a lot of these times where we play these sides who are favorites and blah, 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 it feels like we're hanging on. And it feels like the classic way is, all right, just hang on defensively and then hit them on the counter. And this was not the case with England at all.
No. I mean, we had chances. We had chances to win the game early.
They were panicking more than we were.
Yeah, totally.
Completely. So that was just fun to watch for me. Yeah. Especially I have this old roommate who's won't watch any of the U.S. games and is like Mr. England, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. I only watch Premier League because, I'm not going to waste my time with MLS, that typical U.S. fake fan. And he was so upset, and it was awesome.
Good to see.
It was awesome.
I think we should give our kudos to Canada as well.
Agreed.
Let's talk about Canada a little bit and just how they approach the tournament. And I thought they were going to get a result in just about every game they played in, and they end up with 0 points. Not even a tie. Couldn't suffice a tie, but they played well. And that's weird to say about a team that got 0 points who hasn't been in the World Cup in 20-something years, I guess. And I thought that they were off to a great start against... Yeah. And they were just... Man, that game against Belgium, it was like... Every pass that made it through was a nutmeg to either a goal or a shot on target. And it was just inches off, and they're so close. And I think that if they keep just progressing, they're going to be a force. And if they just keep playing and sending guys, they start out in MLS, and then they go take a dip overseas and try to get to that next level. So tough for them to go out, but also Belgium in that group goes out, which is wild.
Awesome.
Right? A talented team also with 4 points and just couldn't get the job done at the end of the day. They looked tired. They looked And Canada looked the better side in most of the occasions. So hats off to those guys. And then Mexico at the last gasp last night, yesterday, was obviously knocked out, even with a win. And, you know, we're the last remaining team from CONCACAF to make it through. No Costa Rica, no Mexico, no Canada. And so the U.S. once again finds its way through in a difficult group, I think. And yeah, but just, you know, other teams in the region, tough way to go out for Mexico or Canada.
Oh my God, that Mexico game, it almost came down to yellow card accumulation.
I know, which is wild.
If that last fair goal play hadn't happened, it would have been freaking yellow card accumulation and fair play. And they were
Mexico
only by
out.
One,
yep.
Which is crazy.
So cruel way to go out, but the last standing CONCACAF team, we'll take it for the region. And we should
so
see
excited.
Ourselves like climb up the ladder. Yeah. If you're the Dutch, we haven't heard too much in the press yet. Today should be that day. What should they be aware of when they watch this U.S. team? Is there one, two, three players that you have seen that have stood out to you in?
I think Dest, the guy from the Netherlands.
Serginho, yeah.
I mean, he chose the U.S. over playing for Netherlands.
Right.
And a lot of the reason he's sort of said before is he kind of felt like the U.S. really, really wanted him. And I think that he might end up being the man of the match for the U.S., honestly.
Yeah, I mean, his last performance in the last game is, I mean, he's only progressed through this tournament. The only thing you think about there is it too much? Do you try to do too much in that game? And I think that that's probably what the coaching staff is saying. Is like, hey, just play your game. Keep it simple. You know what you can do on the ball. You play like a Dutch player, to be fair. So he probably has more insight to any of these players than anyone. He's actually probably giving the team talk before the game. Is he the one who's breaking it down when Greg says, hey, we're watching this player, watch out for this? Is he raising his hand, stepping up and saying, no, actually, I've played with him. I know that he doesn't like to get hit. I know that he, you know, doesn't like physicality, things like that. That's an advantage for us, right? We're going to see those guys hopefully step up in team meetings and say, okay, well, you might have this view of him, but if I'm the coaching staff, I'm like, hey, anything to add here? Like, this is your floor routine to say, pick out something from each of these players and help our team out tactically. And Musa, is whoever you're going to match up in the midfield with, what do they like, right? How can you make their life difficult on this Dutch side? But again, just a fantastic way for this U.S. team to continue moving on.
What do you think? Final prediction for that game?
I don't think that we'll keep them off the board. I would say 2-1. I think that that's probably a fair result for us to advance. I think we have, if Christian is healthy, and it's weird, like I know he took one to the abdomen or whatever we're saying, wherever he took it, and he's good after the game, and then the day after, it's the second day, which is today, tonight for them, that he's probably feeling it the most. So if he makes it through a full training tomorrow, I'm confident. But also, I mean, he's been unreal this tournament.
Unbelievable.
I mean, I don't see any team in the world right now saying, I want that.
No.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, his ability to attack players and get into goal-scoring dangerous positions, I've never seen it out of, I mean, Landon kind of moves the same, but Christian's at a different level, I think.
That's what you hope is the next generations, you know, keep going, that we're building on our old stars, and we hope that, you know, we keep getting better.
I was talking with Steve Lenhart last night, actually, and he kind of brought up a good point of all these guys growing up now were watching our generation play, which I never thought about that. And that's kind of cool to think about. I don't think they watch me play, but just surrounding yourself in that generation of soccer players who, you know, had done well at a couple World Cups, 2002, that's the generation that I started watching, and then that run in 2014, these guys were watching that saying, okay, I want to do that. I can do better than that. And that's cool to think about, that you were kind of part of that generation that hopefully propelled these guys to get to the next level, which is neat. I never kind of put that together.
Completely. We're totally building on a foundation that your generation started.
Yeah, it's interesting. That was an interesting thought. So, big news with the Sounders, and we're going to have Steve Zakawani sitting down with our Craig Weibel and teeing up a cool interview that he got to chat with Craig. So, enjoy that interview. Game on Saturday, 7 o'clock in the morning. I'll be hanging out at the Armory at the Space Needle hanging out. So, come watch the game. We'll be there flying. Bring breakfast for me, donuts, whatever you want, and we'll catch up and be hanging out there. But We'll revisit this at the end of the day. We're hopefully revisiting a win next week and watching this team advance. So until then, side by side, Brad Evans, Steve Zakuani, and Keeley.
Your official title is GM and then the Chief Soccer Officer. All right,
so it's good to know.
Yeah,
it's good to know.
Being a former UW, you know, Husky, and you know, Sounder yourself, just speak from that perspective. Overall, big picture, what does it mean to you to become the third GM in Sounder's history?
Yeah, I think all three of those things are a little bit overwhelming. Yeah. I think you know as well as anyone in sport, it rarely takes you home. And this was amazing a year and a half ago to come back, just to get to come back to Seattle and be a part of it. Now to take over, it'll take me a few days to digest, I think. Yeah. But look, I mean, I'm a Northwest guy, you know. I grew up with the Dogs, and I am one. And then I was a Sounder, and the adventure took me all over the U.S., but yeah. It's pretty incredible. To get to be a part of all of these legacies and to get to be a significant part of all of the legacies. I don't often turn around and analyze my own doings or accomplishments, but it'll sink in at some point.
Yeah. And you mentioned there, you know, your roots are here in the Pacific Northwest. It's such a rich soccer culture and history.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? You know, obviously your name is there. You could Schmetz's history with the Sounders. Adrian goes all the way back. Just why is this great Seattle or Washington area so rich with soccer history?
Well, I think it's a unique mentality to grow up playing soccer, because it doesn't matter what age you are. If you play soccer in the Northwest, you're going to freeze. And you better love it, because you aren't going to make it through if you aren't willing to freeze. And I think also geographically, there's just this wonderful camaraderie in the Northwest. We are geographically isolated from a lot of the country. And that in and of itself means the competition. You get to know everyone. I mean, I remember growing up, and I knew every player from Eastern Washington all the way down to the other side of the river in Southern Washington, you know, whatever that city's called. And, you know, look, it's an amazing place, but it also breeds its own success. And because of the geographical layout, we just have such pride in our own. Yeah. You know, it's inevitable. And not many people leave.
Yeah.
So come builds on that.
That's
you might
true.
Be one of those.
That's very true. I'm here. I feel myself here. I was touching your playing career, but you've actually, you know, you bring a lot of experience even on the front office side to this as well. Obviously, the years at Salt Lake, you came to Sounders just about a year and a half ago, I think, when you came back here. How do you think those two roles you've had so far prepare you for this one? Or maybe they don't?
No, I think the experience does. I think the league evolves so quickly, though.
Yeah.
You know, if you look back to when I took over in 2015 at Salt Lake, it's not even the same league. It's not the same rules. It's not the same financial barriers. And it's not the same players being attracted to the league. And so I think in many ways, what I've taken the most from those roles is lessons of leadership, lessons through failures, lessons through successes. But I think overall, the biggest thing is just the pursuit of inclusion. You know, I think sport in and of itself is very exclusive.
Yeah.
You know, we have locker rooms that you can't go in, but this person can. You know, we have certain situations that create this necessary exclusivity. But in the front office, the more inclusion, the more success, the more environment that gets created. And I think, you know, from your playing days, it's hard as a player to even know who exists around you that are putting all of these wonderful days together that we just call games.
Yeah.
And so that is something that until I went into the front office, I didn't truly have the feeling of. And I think it's important that we get that back through our culture and our environment.
Yeah. You were drafted by the Sounders into the A-League.
Yep.
And a long MLS playing career. when you were a player, and I think I played against you towards the back end of your career, I think it was your Houston at the time.
Yeah, I was quite slow compared to you.
I wasn't going to mention it. were you thinking, like, did you have a plan when you were playing? Were you one of those guys that was like, you know, okay, I have maybe two more years, and then that's my next step? So were you kind of taking it day by day, and you sort of falling into this new part?
No, I fortunately, my career was remarkably humble. Yeah. I mean, I was fortunate. I played on good teams. I contributed to good teams, and I was able to win quite a bit as a pro. But I was never the standout player. I was never the person in front of the camera. I was never the person in the microphone or wanted for an interview. And so I always knew that it could be an end. You know, I mean, I had played forever for Dominic Kinnear, and it was a conversation we had at the end of every season. Is this my last one? You know, I never knew when that last one was. So I always had an eye on what was next. But I coached the whole time I played, anywhere from, I think I started here when I played for the Sounders with a U14 boys team. When I was playing in Houston, I was an assistant coach with the Rice Women's University team. So I knew I loved coaching. I knew I loved teaching. And I also knew from growing up in my house and communicating with my father and what he did in life that this idea of corporate organization, of going from being a part of the puzzle pieces to putting the pieces together and really guiding that was of interest. So I always had a long-term vision, but I might have fallen into it a little quicker than I thought I would after retiring.
Yeah. You've coached at Michigan Wolverines, also with UW. Do you think you prefer this side of it, or was there a chance that in another life you'd have continued just going up on the bench?
Well, I'll overshare. look, when I coached with Jamie, Jamie's the one that when I had the opportunity to go to be an assistant coach with Real Salt Lake, he just looked at me and said, "You're gone." Yeah. I kind of looked back across the table like, "Wait," and he was the one that just said, "Look, this is part of where you're going," and I loved coaching. Yeah. I mean, I love those tangible moments of teaching someone on the field. Yeah. Watching them improve and that moment where they do and they gain that confidence as a human and as a player, those are so addictive to coaches. Yeah. And look, when I was offered the role of sporting director at Real Salt Lake, I actually asked the question back. You know, I said, I am having such a wonderful time growing as a coach. Is this a choice I have to make? Or has this choice been made for me? And so, you know, I've always pursued positions that allow me to enable other people to do better. I always perceived myself as a player that it was my job to make my right midfielder and my center back all-stars. It wasn't my job to be one. It was just my job to do that. And I think that's just always how I've gone about it. Yeah. And so the puzzle's always interested me. And so there's a natural progression to that, but the timelines are never known. You know, I couldn't have told you what the timeline was, and I couldn't have told you this was going to happen. So,
You have a long history with the head coach here, Ryan Schmitzer.
Yeah,
talk a little bit about that. Your dynamic with Schmitz.
So it's the glamorous life that we lead as pros. You know, I played a couple years for the Sounders, and then I got signed by the Galaxy. What people don't know behind the scenes is that I never got to travel for an away game because I never made the 18. So I was always traveling to play for the Sounders when I was with the Galaxy. You know, I did get to play with the guys. Ziggy played me sometimes, okay. I'll be honest. Okay. Credit to Ziggy, rest in peace. And he was a wonderful man. And look, he was also wonderful in the sense that he understood I wanted to play soccer. So when I wasn't gonna travel, I would come back on loan. And in 2001 and 2002, those were the years where I was trying to find my feet in MLS. But I was finding games with the Sounders, and that's when Brian took over. And, you know, he referenced downstairs one interaction that I'm sure I'll let him share at some point if he wants to. But we have a long history, and it's a long history of stubborn, competitive men going, you know, sharing ideas and sharing performance and really sharing the responsibility of trying to bring something into the culture. And I think one of the things with Brian and I that does align pretty quickly is we have just a tremendous amount of civic pride in this area growing up here, and we really do wear that as a responsibility to perform.
Yeah.
You know?
The Sounders, you know, speak to the fans here for a bit. It's been so successful. So successful.
Yeah.
Since they should. You mentioned in your press conference, they've won everything there is to win.
Yep.
Obviously, now will be the Club World Cup will be next. But it's not a team that needs a revamp, a massive revamp. Maybe a couple of tweaks here and there. Yeah. How do you sort of see the challenge ahead for you to get the team back to the playoffs where it should be?
So, you know, I referenced it earlier, is sometimes you take over or a job opening comes because it was broken.
Yeah.
The project was broken and they needed new leadership. That's not the case. This is, there's a lot of very good pieces here. And so, to your point, tweaking and going forward, and you know, part of the difficult part of this position is overseeing those tweaks.
Yeah.
And what do they mean? Because we can use the word tweak and it sounds small, but sometimes it's a really important or legacy piece of an organization. Sometimes you lose those legacy pieces like Garth, yeah, or when Gonzo left, or when Jimmy left. And, you know, it's not always bad. It's their personal evolution as well. Yeah. But overseeing the difficult parts is something that I've had to learn the hard way in leadership position. And I think the biggest piece is transparency with players. You know, as a player, I always had respect for the coaches that just told me. And front office is a different conversation because you're also, it's not just playing time. Now you're bringing in a financial value, and these bring up emotions that we as humans have to share and find a way to share respectfully. And so some of these challenges that lay out are just natural evolution of team. But you're right, man. This place has a lot of really good pieces, and it's not just what exists in the organization. We have a lot of really good alums,
yeah,
that are heavily involved in what we do and have very strong knowledge of what we're trying to accomplish. So it's really taking that in and reconnecting. I want to reconnect with a lot of the guys that are here, a lot of the men that have played for this organization that perhaps feel a little bit on the fringe or just haven't been to a game in a while. You know, this organization is so strong, but one thing, I am an alum. Yeah. And last year, we finally had an alumni event, and we only got some of us here. Yeah. You know, going forward, that's going to be a big part of what we need to be.
Yeah. No, I love that. I'll give you the last word here. So last year, mixed bag, massive success, Champions League. I mean,
yeah,
unbelievable night, and then to the disappointment of missing the playoffs. What's your message to the fans, just for the 2023 season? Why should they be excited? It starts up pretty soon. I mean, you guys are coming back about 4.5
Maybe just roll back in.
So what message do you have to the fans? Fans want a reason to be optimistic. Just used to so much success and had a down year last year. What would you message to them for 2023?
Yeah, it's a darn good group of players. It really is. And I'm not looking to come in and you know, all the cliches of put my stamp on it, or, you know, I want to be the person that people know the least, that puts the puzzle together and lets everyone go get attention for the accomplishments. I think this group is damn good. And I think the players are really talented. And I think what we as a staff need to focus on is how we are managing them and the minutes we're playing them and when we're playing them. And, you know, this is going to be a ridiculously busy year. I mean, we roll in and we play in the Club World Cup and we go straight into the league, and then we have a new competition in the summer, which is good because now we have another trophy to pursue and try and win.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a lot of games. Yeah. And you look at the way MLS rosters are structured, we have a lot of really good players that our fan base still isn't familiar with. They know them. They're not familiar yet because they haven't seen them enough. And I think this year we have the opportunity as a staff and as a club to really feature a lot more players in a lot greater circumstances because of these competitions that we put ourselves in. Club World Cup's the beginning of something really special, and it's not to say that we're gonna go out and you know, command the respect of the world, but it is to say we're gonna die trying.
All right, absolute pleasure. Wish you all the best going forward.
Thanks, man.
All the best.
And I'm
going to Qatar this weekend, so if you need any players you want to talk to.
I'm glad you held that for the end.
Agent Steve will be down there.
Because I would have told you I'm not talking to you anymore.